Hi, welcome to BA Brew. I'm Lisa.
Hi, I'm Kat.
Hi, I'm Andrew.
Hi, I'm Pete.
And today we're here to talk about learning styles and preferences. So that means for you as an individual, how you like to learn in the most effective and efficient way, the way that gives you the most value from the topic. So there's quite a big body of work around various frameworks from researchers and experts. So three of which we'll mention today. So one is Kolb, who did a matrix based on four different parts. So they identified accommodating, diverging, converging, and assimilating as four different areas that were based on two sets of dimensions. So doing, watching, feeling, and thinking. And then we've also got Bloom, who identified what they classed as three domains. So cognitive, which is about thoughts and knowledge, so what the student is able to do. Effective, so that's feelings and choices, so how the student chooses to act. Psychomotor, which is your physical skills, so what the student can perform. And one that I think we're probably all a bit more familiar with is Honey and Mumford's learning styles. So there's four of those, and they are activist, pragmatist, theorist, and reflector. Now, Pete, I know you've been teaching this particular framework for quite some time. You can perhaps give a better overview than me. Would you mind stepping through those four?
I'll give it a try. So I think, you know, people learn in different ways. I think this can be useful not just when thinking about, for example, on training courses. We run lots of training courses. We try as trainers to be conscious if we spot certain learning behaviours and try and align those to our way of teaching and things. But actually, it can be quite useful as a technique for people in BAs working in facilitating workshops, because you could then also spot the reflectors from the activists. If I just explain a little bit about it, I'll try not to get too theoretical about it, but I mean, effectively, an activist is someone that learns through doing. They're an active learner. So, you know, if you sit and preach to them and talk to them a lot, they're going to switch off, because their way of learning is to have a go. And, you know, they'll try things, and if they don't work, they'll make some changes, and they'll learn through doing, effectively. I have to say, I think there is a little bit of an activist in myself. You know, sometimes I just like to cut to the chase. You know, you buy a new toy, for example, or like new telly. You don't suddenly take out the manual and read through everything first. That's probably more the theorist, as a learning style, someone that likes to know all of the theory and the background to something in order to give it context. Activists actually like to just get in with it and learn that way. So, you know, open the box and just press all the buttons and see what happens, you know, and trial and error to some extent. So I think, you know, activists and theorists tend to almost be opposites, although interestingly, sometimes in different situations, people can have a bit of both of those traits. Then you come to pragmatists, and pragmatists like to learn through thinking about how to practically apply something in their own world. You know, they try and make it to, you know, connect it to something to do with their own world. I'll give you an interesting example of a pragmatist. I once ran a one person course, and I thought, oh, you know, if it's just a one-to-one, then, you know, we're going to get away early, because, you know, we can just get through the material really quickly. What I didn't know is I had an extreme pragmatist on that course, and not only did we go over the theory, but he then wanted to discuss how he could apply that when he got back to work. So we talked about every piece of theory, every technique, and he was, you know, trying to think, right, okay, well, how is this going to work for me when I get back to the office? So you know, very much thinking about the practical application rather than just the theory of something. And I think the reflector, it's probably self-explanatory. It's someone that likes to reflect on things. So, you know, people that, for example, are on a training course, that you see that they're probably not contributing so much, and they're quite quiet, but they're reflecting on what they're hearing, and they have to sort of make sense of things. I think, as I say, there's not necessarily one particular trait that dominates in any individual. It could be a mixture of those, although you often do find that. And I think you're going to say something about that then, Lisa.
Yeah, so it is interesting, isn't it? Because when you read about it, it does say that there's usually one or two that are quite dominant. For myself, I don't know if you know, but there's a questionnaire that you can do free online to find out what your preferred style is. And mine was really quite interesting. It came back as like one point towards activist, so very, very low I was on the activist. But the other three were equally balanced. So it was quite, the only thing that was really conclusive was that I'm definitely not an activist, you know, in certain things anyway. So
you're the person that opens up the manual then and reads through the entire manual before you you start to
use it. I don't have to read through the entire manual, but I wouldn't just think, oh, great, a new toy. I'd be like, right, how do I get the best out of this? How do I use
it?
Yeah. How about you, Kat? I think you've looked at this before through your training. Do you think you're one style more than the other, or?
Yeah, I think I'm probably a mix of both. So my sort of learning style incorporates elements of both reflector and the pragmatist. Mm-hmm. So whereas sort of the formal course gives me the foundation, you know, to ask questions in sort of like the real time and clarify things immediately. But I like to reflect on it and then kind of marry the two up. The pragmatic side is sort of like sort of using the information and then creating ways to learn from that, I guess. Mm-hmm. But yeah, definitely two. I touch on two.
Yeah, so I think the time element makes a difference as well, doesn't it? I find personally that the more time I've got, the more conducive it is to my learning. You know, I think I've got plenty of time. I can really get, you know, absorb myself in a topic, or, you know, maybe it's the analyst in me. I don't know.
Yeah,
it's an interesting point, actually, Lisa, isn't it? Because, I mean, for example, you know, if I apply this back to training courses and exams and things like that, I mean, if you're learning for an exam, then quite often you focus on, say, a syllabus, and you'll think, right, what do I need to know in order to pass this exam? Depending on the type of exam it is, you're not so much focusing in that context. You're not so much focusing on how could I use this as a technique, a framework within my work. You know, that's sort of secondary at that point. So, you know, certain learning styles will dominate because of the context of learning there.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I suppose if you're looking at something like business analysis, you know, like for the textbook approach, that'd be different to, you know, like if you were learning to be a mechanic or, you know, a joiner or something like that. That is a good point. I suppose the context really does matter. Thanks, Kat. How about yourself, Andrew? Do you think you've got one?
Well, yeah, no, I don't think I have one. I think it's quite context dependent. But like Pete was saying, but sometimes with like manuals and stuff, or if it's a new piece of software, I'm quite hands-on. I like to get stuck into it and try and figure it out myself. So that's probably more activist. But I think when it's more theories and ideas, I sometimes am more reflector, especially if I'm quite new to the concepts. I'm sometimes less active to get involved immediately, and it might take me a little bit of time to get bored of it. And sometimes I will find myself not immediately understanding it. I'll get the general gist, but then I'll go away and see something or read something else and kind of relate it back to it. So yeah, it's a bit of a combination of things, I think, and yeah.
That's a good point.
Lisa, are you?
No, sorry, Peter. No, go for it. It's fine.
Well, I was going to say, I think sometimes, again, coming back to training courses, because that's what I know best, I think sometimes, you know, people do exercises and things on training courses. The exercises, of course, are more based on the pragmatist part of learning, aren't they? You know, actually trying something out to try and embed the learning, what you've understand, what the theory is. But then sometimes when people go back to work, they find that they don't fully understand about something, and they then need to go back and read through the theory before they then start to apply it in practice. I also think, maybe this is the cynic in me, but I also think there's an element of different learning styles with what's commonly known as imposter syndrome. I don't know how much everyone knows about imposter syndrome, but you know, there's situations where you feel that you're an imposter, that you're, you know, participating in something, but you're not, you know, you're not worthy, you're not skilled enough to do that. And I think if you're going to be going into, say, a meeting where you've got that sense of imposter syndrome, and you think, actually, you know, I'm going to be lost here, I you know, all of these people know a lot more about this than I do, then you tend to naturally flick back to the theorist, because you think, right, I'm going to do my homework, I'm going to find out what's going on here and what all of this is about, so that when I get into that meeting, I can come across as more confident and more knowledgeable. So I think, you know, again, I know it's sort of a broken record, but it's context dependent again, isn't it?
Yeah, you're so right though. I mean, I always feel a lot more confident when I'm prepared, when I've had time to go through, you know, the topic that we're talking about, or that we will be talking about, or, you know, if it's a subject matter expert sort of meeting, you need to really get up to speed. As an analyst as well, you've got to learn quickly, haven't you, in a lot of cases. You're often invited late to meetings, even to projects. You know, so it's good if you've got that mindset, but if you haven't got the time to then get up to speed, yeah, I can see why that would give rise to being that imposter feeling. Interesting you mentioned as well, Pete, the courses, because we tend to offer kind of like a three-pronged approach to training. So we offer, you mentioned already, the tutor-led courses, the physical binder that Mandy sends out for us to all our delegates, and also we've got the e-learning suite as well for quite a few different courses as well. So Kat's one of our esteemed former apprentices. Kat, you've had all this firsthand as a user in terms of the learning content. How did you find each of those in relation to your learning styles and preferences? Did you have one favourite over the others, or maybe enjoyed different contents for different reasons, perhaps?
Yeah, it was definitely a blend of all three. That I really liked the formal learning, so again I could ask the questions in the moment, and the online learning, so I could go and reflect and sort of cross-reference the two and marry them up, but also the physical manual for annotating and making my own notes and maybe the answers to the questions, so that when I did go back I'd got that material. I kind of threw a fourth one in there too, so maybe a four-pronged approach, and actually collated my own sort of digital scrapbook from sort of snippets of the online learning and answers and things, and I was able to sort of use that to search for any keywords and things and put that into real practice, and it really helped. Yeah, so a blend of all three.
It's quite interesting you say that, because there is something about visual things versus sort of narrative and textual things. And some people, I mean, I don't know whether it's a recognized learning style. I think in schools they talk about things like kinesthetic learning and stuff, don't they? But and visual learners and things. But I think, you know, picking up on multiple different stimuli, if you like, to help the brain grasp content concepts. And we often teach mind maps and rich pictures on courses, and of course this kind of plays to that as well, isn't it? So I like your reference. You probably have to patent that or copyright it, you know, this scrapbook learning idea. I really like that, and I think sometimes, if I'm honest, I think I've probably even tried it myself when I'm revising for exams and things. That sometimes you can have a sort of basic narrative mind map, but it then helps if you then got sort of a visual to kind of reinforce something there as well, you know, picture of life cycle or the model or whatever. It really just solidifies that. I really like that.
Exactly that. It was sort of just a scrapbook of visuals that I was easy to quickly reference when searching for or revising for the exams. So yeah,
brilliant.
It's always good when you can convert things into your own notes, isn't it? And your own way of thinking, and almost relate it back to a situation that happened years ago, or it just helps you to learn. And I suppose remember the content when you come back to it in a few years' time, you think, oh, just look up that as a reference from that course I did, you know, back in whenever 2024. It just helps, doesn't it, to to remind you what it was all about. Oh, fantastic. So so Andrew, so you head up the team that sort of creates all the digital development content. So
yeah,
your team produces all the e-learning that delegates and apprentices have access to and can work through. Did you think there's a, I suppose you do probably even without noticing perhaps, do you think there's a bit of a thought process around playing to people's learning styles? What's your kind of thought process for when you're creating the content?
Yeah, there definitely is. Similar to what Pete was saying, when you're a trainer, you kind of have to pick up on different learning styles. Obviously, you can't do that when making e-learning, but we do try and make it so it can, people with different learning styles can all use it. So it's not just goes down one approach. Because I think sometimes when people think of e-learning, they might think of training they might have had to have done for their company, which sometimes done e-learning. For example, when I worked for a supermarket chain, one of the training I had to do was like health and safety training. You have to watch a video, watch it all the way through. At the end, it asks you some questions on it. You got one question wrong, you then have to watch the entire video again, answer the questions again. You go, there's no way to progress. But I think our e-learning sort of built so that many different learning styles can all use it. You know, some people who want to jump straight in can do so, or they might make us go through the slides, do the questions, and they can do it like that. And they can also jump around. That's the main thing. But some people who want that more linear style, I think, can just do it slide by slide and go back to things if they don't understand it and go forwards and everything. And there's definitely also a mix of visual and audio to try and mix that up for some people. And even some people might like for more text-based rather than visual and things. We also provide sort of electronic access to the course manuals as well. That can help some people because they might quite like that next to the audio and stuff, just to read as they're going along, or just to just read over it again afterwards. So yeah, it's quite a mix of different ways we can try and help people, various learning styles. And I don't think just because you think you might learn in one way, I don't think necessarily e-learning's not for you. So yeah.
Mm. We're all different, aren't we? And you know, we have to cater. Yeah. It's an interesting point though, isn't it? You know, because when you're building a product like an e-learning product, you want to try and make that accessible to as many different people as possible. And when I say accessible, I'm not talking strictly about accessibility here, although obviously that's important, but you know, how can people engage with it? How can you try and get their attention and help them to take on the content in different ways? I think it was an interesting point you made as well, Andrew, about the being able to go back to things and the order of things. Because sometimes, you know, people, I think, work very well when there's a very strong structure and they follow something logically in a linear way. But other people kind of find out a bit and then they went, oh, hang on a minute, I want to go back and double check that again before I move on to the next bit. So that gives that flexibility. You can't do that in a tutor-led course. You know, you can't suddenly say to the tutor, oh, you know that session we had yesterday about stakeholders, can you do it again, please? You know, that just wouldn't work. But it does work in an e-learning.
There's also some people who like to answer the questions first and go backwards, which, again, in the e-learning you can do that, especially if you have some basic understanding already. So there is always that option as well. It depends, it depends who you are and how you learn, I think. So, yeah.
Do the test questions first, find out what you don't know, then go and focus on the bits that you need to know, and then go and try them again at the end. I like that.
See, I'm feeling uncomfortable just listening to that. Sounds awful. I like to work through it methodically. I'm one of these annoying people, but exactly, that would drive me crazy. But interestingly, when ahead of this brew, I did a bit of reading just around general learning, and I read something about how some people have some courses or maybe some exams. I'm not necessarily talking about any BA content, just generally. Some are geared up for like memory tests. So you can have somebody who's really at work, a real expert, really knows the stuff, but actually the qualification for what they do is very much about, you know, using the memory. And they might not be very good at that. So it's difficult because it doesn't always show how good they are at what they do every day, you know, because, you know, it's kind of like a textbook course where they need to sort of learn the textbook way of doing things. And
I mean, that is an interesting point, actually, Lisa, because I would imagine a number of viewers or listeners are either studying for the BA diploma, the BCS BA diploma, or have done so. And I'm an examiner, an oral examiner on the BA diploma scheme. And, you know, it's very much about the theory and then being put on the spot and having to apply that theory in a new context, given a scenario from an examiner. So it isn't about, you know, what have you done in the past? How do you do this? It's about, okay, let's just take the theory and how would you use it in this context? You know, what would you do in this situation? And I remember some years ago, I examined a candidate who was very technical. I think she was a C++ programmer or something like that, that had put herself through the BA diploma scheme as a sort of academic exercise. It's a bit like people that love learning languages, isn't it? Just as an academic exercise. And she passed with flying colours. She's never done a day's BA work in her life and never applied anything that she's learned. But clearly she's got that ability to, you know, conceptualize things and to take on the theory, but then to think, you know, almost abstractly, how would I do that? How would I use that? So maybe there's something there about another kind of learning style. That's, I guess you could say she's probably more, you know, the theorist there than the pragmatist or the activist.
Yeah, absolutely. That's it. There must be, I mean, there's, as we mentioned earlier, there's a lot of, there's a big body of work around this kind of thing, lots of different frameworks and things. There's probably, we could have, maybe we've thought of another one today, you know, another dimension that's not been covered before. But no, it's just interesting. I think as well, something that when we teach, I think it tends to be in line with, when we teach learning styles, it tends to be in relation to maybe facilitation skills or stakeholder engagement. You mentioned already, Pete, that when you're training, you think about people's learning styles. But I think also if you're facilitating a workshop, for example, it's interesting to know what learning styles people have so you can engage them in the best way. So, for example, you like to be quite hands-on. If we did a presentation and a bit of facilitation but no like practical exercises, we might lose you early on, you know. So I suppose it's about knowing if you know ahead of time who's joining the session, you can maybe do a bit of work around that and make sure it plays to the different styles again.
It's also an interesting point about the use of sort of virtual meetings. You know, I guess we're having a virtual meeting here, aren't we? But although it's being recorded, but we're all very familiar with that way of working now. But you often find that some people really engage and ask questions and try and, you know, understand what's being discussed. Other people, I find this a lot on courses, you know, kind of have their camera switched off. So you never quite know what they're doing. You know, are they just sitting there playing a game, you know, and they're reflecting on something completely different to what you're talking about? You know, their mind's wandering all over the place. So I think, you know, even for everyday meetings, there's an element here of trying to understand, you know, how can I engage the attention of my audience, and recognizing, you know, that some people are going to be very active in their engagement with the meeting. Others are probably less so. And, you know, you can't really force people that are reflectors to try and become activists. You know, that's going against the grain a bit. I've been on some courses where the trainers have picked on people and said, right, OK, tell me what you think about this. And I can sort of feel for that poor person, you know, that actually that's really going against the grain, because they're fundamentally more reflective. They don't like to be put on the spot and suddenly dragged into a session and become an activist. It just doesn't work for them.
Yeah, that's making me think of like the difference. Is it brainstorming and like brain writing, where you either put on post-it notes or if you're the kind of person that's a bit more talkative, you're happy to shout ideas out and you're not too worried about what people think, whereas other people are a bit more uncomfortable with that kind of thing, aren't they? So
And it's an interesting point, because, you know, using a mixture of techniques, as Andrew said about, you know, we try and do this on the e-learning courses, but using a mixture of facilitation techniques, so a combination of brainstorming, brain writing, post-it notes, and round robin or whatever, because then that plays to different styles. I mean, arguably things like the post-it note and the writing things are most inclusive and don't tend to put people on the spot as much.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I suppose you can try and cater for everyone, but you know, it's not always possible, is it? But at least if we use some of these tools as best we can, it definitely does help. So, any final thoughts from you, Kat, on this subject of learning styles? Do you think it's useful? It's a useful thing.
Yeah, definitely. To recognise the sort of range of learning styles has definitely helped me when, as you guys have said, when planning workshops and things and giving different options, not just sticking with digital requirements gathering and things like that, and doing different exercises that does cater for all diverse needs and ways of learning. But I suppose my key takeaway from this is that no single learning style worked in isolation. It was the combination of all three or four in my case that sort of really made the difference to my learning, and I'm grateful that Assist offered that. So yeah,
excellent,
wonderful. Thank you. Thanks, Kat. Andrew, any final thoughts on learning styles?
I think quite similar as well. I think that no one has. I think everyone's a combination of learning styles. I think sometimes, and there might be the case where e-learning might not be for you completely. You might just much prefer learning in groups and that's how you learn. But I don't think that necessarily means e-learning is not completely not for you. And like Kat says, it is great to have different options and use them from different ways. Yeah.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Thank you. And Pete, any final thoughts?
I've always got final thoughts, as you know, at least. the thing that sort of occurs to me, coming back to Kat's background, having come through the apprenticeship scheme, is that the apprenticeship schemes are so powerful, I think, as a way of helping people get ready for a new career, because you're having to use a selection of learning styles, because there's different mechanisms for assessment, there's different mechanisms for learning. You're being, kind of judged on your knowledge, so hence the theorist bit makes sense in that context, but also your practical application, your behaviours. We talk about knowledge, skills and behaviours on those schemes. It's really kind of requiring people to, at least, try and learn using a range of different learning styles.
Absolutely. No, it's good to know, like a lot of these things, it's good to know the sort of theory behind it, isn't it, and the different models that you can apply just so you can use it as best you can, really. Well, thank you all so much for joining me. Thank you to our viewers and listeners. As usual, if you have any ideas for future BA Brew podcasts, please do email us at babrew@assistkd.com. Thank you.